Let's talk about John Lennon. John Lennon became world famous as the founder, co-leader, co-songwriter, co-lead singer of that great rock and roll group, the Beatles. It was also John Lennon and his relationship with Yoko Ono that many believe became the catalyst for the breakup of the Fab Four in 1970. But even though the Beatles came to an end in 1970, Lennon's career continued to motor on. In fact, throughout the 70s, he had many hit songs, hit the airwaves, and put out many more albums just on his own. But none of his other hits compared in popularity to his song, Imagine. I'm sure all of us have heard the song, Imagine. Imagine was Lennon's vision of a perfect world. A world with no religion, a world with no borders, a world with no possessions, a world with no boundaries, a world with no divisions, a world that promoted peace and harmony, and everybody just got along. And that song created quite a firestorm across our country. In fact, talking about this song back in the early 70s, shortly after he wrote it, Lennon made this statement. He said that it is virtually the Communist Manifesto, even though I'm not particularly a communist and do not belong to any movement. And so there are people all across this country saying this song is communist, and I can see why they said that. And, you know, interesting thing about communism. Communism is a system that presents utopia on paper, but wherever it's practiced, it produces the opposite dystopia. Have you ever noticed that? But anyway, that's what Lennon's song was about. Now, instead of spending our morning picking apart Lennon's vision of a better world, I want us to take some time and look at someone else's vision of a better world, the Apostle Paul. We're in Ephesians. And we've been working our way through this great letter that Paul wrote to these people a long, long time ago. And we just completed last week the first half of that letter where Paul lays out some truth about Jesus and the cross and what the cross provides for us, new life by grace through faith. We've seen that because of Jesus, we are new people, and not just new people as individuals, but we are a new humanity, that God has done a great work in our lives, in us together. And Paul concludes the first half of his letter with that amazing doxology that includes Ephesians 3:20, a verse that we quote almost every Sunday here at the end of our service, where Paul writes, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us." And then beginning in chapter 4, Paul begins to imagine what this world of new humans in Christ can look like. And he paints an amazing picture just in the first three verses of Ephesians chapter 4. When he says this, notice this, he says, "I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." Now, as we begin to walk through these three verses this morning, I want to challenge you to consider what your world could look like if the people in your world lived out these three verses. And to make it practical for you, I want to encourage you to pick one environment that you spend a lot of time in every week. It might be your home. It might be where you work. It might be the school you go to. It might be your church, your neighborhood, or even your city. And just as we walk through this, I want to encourage you to imagine what your world would look like if the people lived like this. In verse 1, Paul begins by saying, "I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you," get this, "to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you are called." The Hebrew people, and Paul was a Hebrew. In fact, he says in the book of Philippians that he was a Hebrew among Hebrews. Paul thought like a Hebrew. The Hebrew people used walking as a metaphor for how a person conducted or lived their lives. And so the way we would say this verse would be like this: I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling to which you've been called. I think it's a beautiful picture comparing the way we live to walking. Because walking compares to living in several ways. Let me give you three real quick. Now, just understand, I could give you a whole lot more, but I'm just going to give you three. Think about this. Walking is purposeful. Whenever a person is walking, they're walking for a reason. You may be walking from the living room to the kitchen during a commercial in a TV show to get some sweets out of the refrigerator that you bought at the youth bake sale. You may be walking from your car into the church building on a Sunday morning. You may be walking around your neighborhood trying to get your heart rate up and burn a few calories because the weather's finally warmed up and it's a good time of the year. But whenever we're walking, we have a purpose for where we are going and a purpose for why we are walking. The same way with life. Life should have purpose. Secondly, walking is sustainable. And here's what I mean by that. You can sprint for a short distance, you can jog for a longer distance, but you can walk and walk and walk and walk and walk. For instance, if we were to have a little contest this morning to play this out, and let's say we got three guys up here. Let's say we got, I don't know, Greg over there, and let's say we pulled up Dr. John over here, and we decided that we're going to test this thing out. And so we draw straws, and Greg gets the short straw, so he's got to sprint, all right? So Greg's going to sprint, and then John gets the medium straw, he's got to jog, and I got the lucky straw, I just have to walk, all right? Now here's what would happen. Wherever Greg's going, he's going to get there first, but John's going to go farther than Greg went, and I'm going to be like the tortoise and the hare, but I will eventually pass both of them because you just don't get tired out walking. It's sustainable. And so what we're seeing here is this: the life we live should be sustained, consistent, day in and day out, not hot one moment, cold the next. It's sustainable. And then finally, walking is learned. None of us were born walking. None of us were a born walker. Well, unless your last name is Walker, and then you were a born walker. But when it comes to literally walking, none of us were born walkers, okay? And so it's something that we learn, and maybe you can remember teaching your kids how to walk, and it's like crawling was so much easier. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that thought, man, this kid's going to crawl to kindergarten if we don't get something going here. But once they get up and going, what? Man, then you're chasing them the rest of your life. You know, it's amazing how that works. I had somebody tell me one time, you know, it's funny with our kids. We spend the first 2 years begging them to talk and walk, then spend the next 16 telling them to sit down and shut up. But that's kind of how it works, you know. So Paul says, I urge you. To walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you were called. In other words, live out what it means to be new in Christ as a people called together in Him. And then in verse 2, he begins to describe what this looks like. He says, with all humility and gentleness, with patience. I'll let these words sink in for a minute. Because I'm not sure these are three words that we would use to describe how to be a winner in this life. I'm not sure we would hear these words come up often at a self-help clinic on how to be successful in this life. Because we get told things like this: it's a dog-eat-dog world. And so you got to get up and get after it. And you got to go hard or go home. And you got to stand up for yourself. And you've got to push yourself to the front. And if you're going to be noticed, you better shout loud or no one will see you, no one will hear you. We're told that this world is a rat race. And it kind of is, isn't it? This world is a rat race. Your career can be seen as a rat race. But it's like what Lily Tomlin once said. The problem with a rat race is even if you win, you're still a rat. And so Paul gives us a different way to live that sounds counterintuitive, and it is certainly countercultural. Paul says, walk this walk out, live this life with all humility. Humility. The word literally means lowliness of mind. And was used up until Paul began using it in the scriptures of a person who thought very little of themselves, that they esteemed themselves low. It was the word that would be used to describe a slave or a servant or a loser, if you know what I mean. But biblically speaking, this word is used in a different way. Because I think biblically what this word means is not so much to think little of yourself, but to think more of other people. Do you see the difference? I'm not called to think little of me. I'm called to think more of you. In other words, no matter what kind of number of worth I put on my life, I should give you a higher number of worth. If I see myself as an 8, I should see you as a 9. If I see myself as a 10, I should see you as a 12. I should see you as more important than me. In fact, that's kind of what this word means. It means that as I go through life today and tomorrow, as I walk this thing out day in and day out, I'm going to treat the people I meet as if they're the most important people I know. Have you ever gone to a party or a gathering? Might be a gathering at work, might be a gathering at school, whatever the case might be a party on the weekend. Have you ever noticed how people walk into the room at a party? Because people tend to walk into a room at a party or at a gathering at work for a meeting in one of two ways. One person walks in like this, here I am. They walk in the door and it's like, here I am. And they're glad, they want everybody to see them. But then there's another type of person who walks in and they say, there you are. There you are. Now, who would you rather hang around with all day? Every one of us is going to pick the there you are people, all right? Yet it's easy to become a here I am person. Have you ever noticed that here I am people get old after a while? All they want to talk about is themselves. They're so consumed with themselves and who they are and what they've done and what they're going to do and what they think they are. And it's just like, oh, I mean, you know what I'm saying, everybody? Paul is saying, no, we want to be people who, when we encounter people, oh, there you are. It's good to see you today. It's good to see you today. Another way to put it is this. If I were to have to summarize it in a sentence and maybe put it on the screen so you could understand it, it'd be this. The humble person says, I will put your needs before mine. And isn't that refreshing in the world that we live in? I will put your needs before mine. Paul says, we're to walk with humility and with gentleness. Gentleness. Now hear me carefully. Gentleness does not mean weakness. Gentleness does not mean that a person is frail. That word gentleness really means you're strong, but you know how to temper your strength for the moment. It'd be kind of like this. I noticed that, I think Nolan, you and your family were in Disney World. You know Disney World? You have a good time? Good to have you back, all right? So it's spring. Nolan's back from Disney World, all right? And let's just say that for some strange reason, Nolan and I decide that we want to get our ball gloves out. Now, I'm not sure where mine is, but I got it somewhere. We want to get our ball gloves out because it's spring and just start playing some catch, all right? So Nolan and I are out in his front yard. Man, we're just playing a little bit of catch and getting the shoulder loosened up, you know, and first few throws are kind of easy. But then we start remembering what it was like back in the day, or at least when it back for me. Back in the day, which was a long time ago in a galaxy far away, you know. And back in the Stone Age, as I told you last week, all right, with the Flintstones and the Rolling Stones. And you remember when you used to play ball with your friends, it was a good throw when it would pop when it hit your mitt. You'll hear that pop when it hits your mitt, you know. So Noah and I, man, we're throwing pop, you know, and pop, you know, and pop back and forth. And then Jake walks out, man. Jake's in the sixth grade. Jake, as a sixth grader, he's got to have an arm like a spring, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, he's a fisherman. He's throwing that, casting that rod, you know, and winning championships as a fisherman. But he wants to play with us, too. He's got him a glove. And so the three of us, man, are just throwing it, pop. Throwing it, you know, just winging at each other, man, having a good time, bringing back memories about when I was a sixth grader, seventh grader, you know, just having a good time with this. And so we're really throwing it hard, and I bet you can't catch this one, you know, having a great time. Then Nolan's little son, Vincent, comes walking out. Vincent's a little kid, all right, he's a toddler. He comes walking out, and he wants to play. Now, neither Nolan, nor Jake, nor me are going to throw a baseball or a softball as hard to Vincent as we would to each other. Now, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it wouldn't be nice. It wouldn't be smart. And number two, if we did, Mama Bear going to come out that house. All right? And three things are going to happen. Nolan's going to die. Jake is going to experience nuclear behind. All right? And Kendall's going to preach his next sermon with a black eye. I'm not going to throw a ball to a 2 or 3 year old at the same velocity that I would throw it to a grown man. I'm just going to sort of pitch it and let it land at his feet. That's what it means to be gentle. Are you with me, everybody? That's what it means to be gentle. And so where humility says, I will put your needs before mine, gentleness says, I will respond to whatever you're going through, all right, according to your weakness, not my strength. In other words, once again, you are more important in this relationship to me than I am. And then Paul gives one more word, patience. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if that word weren't in here? Or am I the only one that's wired that way? Patience. When we think about patience, we tend to think about people whose personality naturally bends toward being a laid-back person that can put up with a lot, okay? In most of the marriages I know, we've got one hardwired person and one person that's just kind of wired to put up with a lot. Now, you can decide which one is which in your home when you get home, all right? And but that's kind of the way it works, all right? And the way it works that way is because that way we're kind of balanced, because if both of us were hardwired and wound tight, all we'd do is fight. And if both of us were laid back, we'd never get nothing done, all right? I mean, you know, we just sit around a lot, you know, sit around talking about it all the time, okay? So that's kind of how it works. But in life, that's how it works. That's not what Paul's talking about here. He's not talking about a person who is naturally, personality-wise, laid back. In fact, this word for patience is not a passive word at all. We kind of see patience as passive. I'm just going to let it go this time. I'm not going to let it get to me this time. I'm just going to kind of put up with it this time. No, it's an active word. It means to persevere. It means to endure. And endurance is anything but passive. It's kind of the idea of if you want to get in physical condition, but you're not right now, which there's some of us in this room, we're not. You're not, all right? I'm just going to break it to you. And we did not help you a bit with the youth bake sale, but we appreciate your support, all right? And so you want to get in shape. And so you join the gym and you go this next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You know what you got? Sore. That's what you got. You got sore. And you're going to have to do it again the following Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then the following Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And keep it up and keep it up. You've got to endure to see some results. In other words, you've got to be patient. And it's the same way as we deal with each other. In order to see results, in order to experience growth, spiritual growth, transformation, we've got to be willing to give each other time and to give ourselves time. You know, it's amazing. I meet people who their life's a mess. They know their life's a mess. They come to church for 2 weeks and then they quit because it didn't work. And I'm like, listen, God's a miracle working God, but you know, don't expect him to fix in 2 weeks what you've spent 3 decades messing up. Sometimes it takes a while. So Paul says, I want you to walk with patience. And what patience means that I'm going to move at your speed. I'm going to move at your speed. I don't know if you've noticed this or not. Maybe you have. I'm a long-legged kind of person. I've got a really good stride, which means when I want to get somewhere quick, I can. The downside to that is, I can be out with my wife, who is, all right, and not nearly as blessed with long legs like me, and other people, the rest of my family, and we go somewhere, and I start walking, like, to the entrance. You know, we've gone, so I'm going to the entrance of the store or the Coliseum we've gone to or whatever it is, church, you know, and I start walking, and I look back, and they're way back there. I didn't mean to leave them, I just did, okay? Patience says, I'm going to slow myself down, and I'm going to walk at your speed and not expect you to huff and puff and walk at mine. It helps when you're walking around a mall with your wife. It helps when you're walking with fellow believers through life. Why is this important? Look at the next statement Paul makes. Verses 2 and 3, he says, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Let's just kind of break these phrases down real quick. I've got to have humility and gentleness and patience if I'm going to bear up with others in love. That word bearing with others has the idea of holding others up. Holding others up. It doesn't just mean putting up with people when they get on your nerves, although that might be included in there too. It's the idea of I'm going to hold you up and we're going to hold each other up. Kind of like if we were constructing a wall, and I've done this before. You know, you're building a wall and it's easy while it's on the floor and you framed it out and you put your 2x4 studs in, but there comes a moment where you got to take that wall that's on the ground and raise it up and hold it while someone secures it to the rest of the building. And at first, it's really not that hard, but let's just say that your partner you're working with forgot the nails, all right? And now they got to go back to the truck or go back to their house or go back to their toolbox or go to Lowe's is usually what happens, you know? And they got to go to Lowe's and there you are holding this up the whole time. It gets old after a while and it starts to get heavy. But because I'm doing it in love, I'm in it for you and not for me. We bear each other up. We don't walk out on each other. And that's why we need humility. And that's why we need gentleness. And that's why we need patience. So we can also, get this last phrase, maintain the unity of the Spirit. Notice this. Paul doesn't say create unity in the Spirit. He doesn't say, I want you Christians, I want you as a church to find a way to be unified. We don't have to create it. We just have to maintain it. And that's a good thing. And you know what? As I live with humility and gentleness and patience, and as you live with humility and gentleness and patience, and as you live with humility and gentleness and patience, and as you live with humility and gentleness and patience, and as you live with humility and gentleness and patience, and even as you over here live with humility, gentleness, and patience, guess what? We maintain that unity. We maintain the oneness that Jesus died to give us, and we experience his peace. That's Paul's vision of a better world. Now, before we go home today, let's go back to John Lennon. Let's go back to John Lennon. I came across a story that in 1977, John and his wife Yoko and their young son, who was about 4 or 5 years old, Sean, went back to Japan, where Yoko was from, to the mountains of Japan for summer vacation. And they were staying in this village that they would bicycle from the cabin they were staying in into the village on a regular basis. And they noticed on the main road through this little village, there were these signs put up that said, "Come to the Power and Light Company." And these were put up by some missionaries. Their names were Stephen and Carol Fleener. They were missionaries in this area. They were part of the Union Church in this area. And they put up these signs that said, "Come to the Power and Light Company." And it was inviting people for free coffee on Sunday mornings and free cake and a conversation in English. This area was an area where many missionaries would congregate when they were like on vacation. Missionaries from the Far East were always in this area, and most of them attended this church and volunteered at the camp this church ran in the summers when they weren't on their own mission assignments. I can only imagine the commotion that stirred up the following Sunday when partway through the worship service at the Union Church, the doors in the back opened up and in walked John and Yoko Lennon. Whispers went out all over the building and people couldn't believe it. And they walked in, they sat down, took in the service with these people, and when it was over, they left. Carol Fleming writes that later that week, she was in her front yard, and they lived at this Christian camp. She was in her front yard when she saw two people coming up on a bicycle, actually two adults and a young child on two bicycles. And at second glance, it was John and Yoko Lennon again. And they pulled into her yard and stopped. And they just kind of stared at each other for a moment. And then John broke the silence by saying this. He said, "I saw your signs on the main road and thought they were clever. I was telling Yoko here that we needed to see what it is all about." We can only imagine at this campground where there are other people outside and a world famous person shows up. Soon a crowd began to gather. Carol Flinner writes that she finally thought of something to say, and she said, "What are you doing in town?" And Lennon replied, "We're staying at a cabin owned by Yoko's family." Of the people who'd gathered, they began to talk and ask questions. And Carol Flinner writes this: "One woman pushed in the front. She had a reputation for being blunt. 'I read about your divorce. How could you leave your first marriage?' she asked." Baptists. Unless she was Pentecostal. Church of God. Religious. Are you with me? Anybody else need to be offended today? I'll get you, man. Okay. "I read about your divorce. How could you leave your first marriage?" she asked. "What are you doing now that the Beatles have broken up?" Everyone crowded closer. Carol writes, "I expected John and his family to turn around and pedal away as fast as they could. But John just smiled. 'Right now, I'm putting my music on hold to spend time with my wife and son,' he said." The woman didn't seem quite satisfied. "Do you belong to a church? I just hear this lady. I went to church with her one time." "Do you belong to a church?" she asked. "Of course," he said. "I'm C of E." A perplexed look came across the woman's face. "C of what?" John laughed playfully. "The Church of England. Haven't you heard of them?" More questions, let me just read this. More questions came, and he listened to each, answering kindly and politely. He didn't contradict anyone in any way. One of the most famous people in the world, notorious even to some, in our humble yard, being scrutinized by people he didn't know and taking it all in stride. Even I had to admit, I was surprised by his patience. Someone else asked, "How could you say those things about being bigger than Jesus?" John shook his head. "When we talk to reporters, we play around with them," he said. "We're just a music group. Don't people know that Jesus is far greater than we are? Carol goes on to write, before I knew it, an hour had passed, and he, Yoko, and Sean prepared to pedal off on their bikes. It's good to talk to all of you, John said. And then he says this. I want you to get this. And by the way, that's a picture that was taken that day when they were talking to these people. I've been looking for something this summer, something spiritual. I've been speaking with a lot of the missionaries I've met here about life and what it all means. Thank you for your words. Now, here's what hit me about this story. Because in this story, it seems to me, the one who was seeking truth had a whole lot more humility and gentleness and patience than some in that group who had the truth. And it makes me wonder, could it be that at least one reason the church in America today has not been effective in impacting our culture? Could it be because this same scenario keeps playing out day after day in community after community, in life after life, in church after church? Let it never be said of us that we lacked humility. Let it never be said of us that we lacked gentleness. Let it never be said of us that we lacked patience. Because odds are someone as famous as John Lennon will never walk through these doors. But people walk in here every week who are just as important to God as a person like John Lennon might be to us. And may they meet in us humility. Your needs are more important than our needs. May they find in us gentleness. I'm going to handle your issues according to your weakness and not my strength. And may they find in us patience. We're going to walk this thing out in your discovering the truth and finding Jesus at your speed, not ours. And I believe God can use us in a mighty way to change our world. Let me encapsulate this message in one sentence. If you remember nothing else, all right, take a picture when it comes up, all right? Write it down so you'll have it. It's in your sermon notes. It goes like this. As we live lives of humility, gentleness, and patience, we become Christ's catalyst for changing our world. It's counterintuitive, it's counterculture, but it's all about Jesus. And I guarantee you, you begin to use this at home, at work, at school, in stores, in restaurants, around town. You begin to use this and live it day in and day out. You'll see God use you, change your world. Do you receive that this morning? Amen. Amen. Let's bow for a word of prayer.